You're listening to Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net. Welcome, everybody, to the one show you can't live without, the only show that takes you out into the wilderness and explores the frontiers of new sales techniques and technologies with your own personal pilgrim and guide. It's Will Crist.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks on this beautiful day in Laguna Beach, beautiful day in Southern California, all up and down the 405, and I have been up and down today, I'll tell you that for sure. Nice day. And we're going to have a good time today. We got a couple of great interviews that are going to be with us. One comes from our desire to take a look at one of the ways of retaining customers. That's been one of the issues we've been looking at. You know, we've been looking at how companies increased sales. We've looked at what they've done to develop their people. We've looked at how they've reduced costs, and we're looking now at how companies are retaining their current customers. And one of the ways of doing that is through excellent customer service. I've been looking around all over California to find those companies that have been known to be super in terms of customer service, outstanding. And I've been asking people to nominate. Of course, I got people like L.L. Bean. I got a number of other national companies that were very good in customer service. Surprisingly, one was Kmart. Take a look at some of the venues where customer service is ranked, and you'll see Kmart way up at the top. People work very hard to retain their current customers, keep them happy, keep them engaged, keep them loyal. One of the companies that came up was Elite Merchant Solutions up in Van Nuys. And so I've been spending a little time with Justin Millmeister, who's the CEO there. I asked him to come on the show today to talk about what it is that he does in customer service to proactively work through all of those issues in this marketplace. Now, Elite Merchant Solutions is a nationwide merchant service provider, and they're licensed by Visa and MasterCard, and their sponsor is Chase Payment Tech Solutions, Wells Fargo, and Elite Merchant Solutions has positioned itself as one of the top merchant service providers in the country. They service all 50 states. They have live operators picking up the phone call. They don't have an automated system. And this has all earned Elite Merchant Solutions envy among all their competitors. So we're going to be talking with Justin Millmeister today, the CEO, to hear how he has built this company based upon customer service. So, Justin, welcome to Pilgrim Talks.
Thank you, Will. Nice to be here.
Super. Tell us a little bit about Elite Merchant Solutions.
Well, as you mentioned, we're a nationwide merchant service provider. So that being said, we process credit cards for merchants in all 50 states and all the auxiliary products that go along with that, such as gift cards, cash advances, any type of electronic payments. We support out of the various offices throughout the country.
All right, and now, how many offices do you have around the country?
We currently have 4 full-service offices, and when I say full-service, I mean we do all the operational support, sales and support out of those offices, and several satellite offices around the country, but 4 full-service offices.
Now, is your industry, the merchant services industry, known for its customer service?
It's not known for its customer service, and that's where I felt there was a niche to really, in an ultra-competitive field such as merchant services, it is extremely competitive, and therefore the niche that I wanted to separate from our competitors was customer service, because generally in our industry, you basically sign up and they give you an 800 number that could be an out-of-the-country type number that's one of those that goes to India, or it could be a you know, it's generally an automated system either way, and takes some time to get to a actual person to help you, a live person to help you.
Well, and isn't that one of the ads on television right now about the fellow seems to be Eastern Bloc, heavy accent, sitting in a room full of telephones, and he's answering as if he were, you know, a super elite customer service person. And that's one of the ads, right? They're poking fun at themselves.
Yeah, right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And that's, it's not too far off that you're getting a lot of people that are, you're dealing with some, with a massive amount of clients, and you know, many people don't feel that they can handle that, and it's just easier to outsource that. And when you outsource, you lose control, and you lose your, you know, you lose your quality control. And you know, there's nobody that's going to treat your customer better than yourself or your employees of the company. Versus when you outsource, you're just rolling the dice, essentially. And that's not a gamble I'm willing to take.
Yeah, outsourcing doesn't automatically mean bad customer service, does
Correct.
It?
Correct. There are, and that's a very good point. Is some absolutely there are some times where there can be a very positive call, but the problem, the thing that we try to avoid is not just taking the chance of having that it'll be a good call versus a bad call. But the matter of to get to that live operator, the time it takes to get to that live operator, you got to do the automated system, press this, press that, say this and say that. We cut all that red tape right out, and you're dealing with a live person from the first second the phone's answered.
All right, so you have live people picking up the phone quickly. You measure that?
It's measure as far as?
How many rings before somebody picks up the phone?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. We did a metrics about a year ago on that, and had a third party company take a look for 30 days to see how quickly a phone was, you know, some of our phones are being answered, and they were the calls were answered 96% under 3 rings.
96% under 3 rings.
Yes, we have everybody here is, we have a big cross-training step, and nobody here is too good to pick up the phone. A lot of our admin that are generally, that's not their responsibility, they'll at least, you know, pick up the phone. The phones are taken very seriously. When somebody calls in, we have a checking in and checking out, so people know if somebody is unavailable to answer the phone, that there's always 2 to 3 backups to on a roving, you know, system. We have a fairly complicated phone system that helps out, helps sort the phone calls out and who's available and who's not.
All right, so you measure, focus on picking up the phone quickly. What other things have you done to improve customer service?
One of the big things we've done that we've found to be extremely successful, and the feedback has been wonderful, and you know, over the years, is we developed a system that basically puts a block of merchants into a specific team. So if that merchant calls up, or that anyone in that group of merchants calls up, they're going to deal with the same, you know, let's call it team A, B, C, and D. Well, if you're dealing with team A, you're dealing with the same people, whether it be a support rep, if you have a question with on your credit card terminal, question on your statement, or any issue you have, you're going to deal with those same team members time in and time out. It develops that type of relationship. Our merchant our business is, like I said, is very competitive. And relationships are what separates us, because they build the relationship. And, you know, it's a lot harder for other than relationships, you're kind of just another commodity, a merchant can switch to fairly easy to another payment provider. So
I wanted to interject here, because I wanted to ask you, when you speak about easily switching, how is this new Square technology, you plug it into your iPhone, was that going to have an effect on your business?
The Square is a product that doesn't affect us per se as much as it may affect somebody that's going after what's called a small or micro merchant that's doing. You know, the Square was made for somebody that really didn't historically accept cards and maybe will do a few transactions a day, maybe a handful. Recently, I read they had some issues because they were only funding a max of, I think it was either $100 or $1,000 a day, and if you went over, they would hold your funds. So it's made, our business is going, we're going out, we go after established businesses that are doing certain types of volume. Generally, we do everything from new business on, but generally the Square was made for a merchant that may only do two transactions a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, so it's kind of like PayPal, merchants that have PayPal. A lot of them don't, they may pay higher fees, but they don't pay some of the other fees to have your own merchant account, per se, so they, because they may only do two, three, five transactions a month.
Okay. Well, I got in the way. We were talking about what have you done to improve customer service.
Yes, and what I was going at is basically in this competitive market. What I mean by competitive is there's always new products coming on and different things of that nature. But when I mean competitive, I mean that another merchant service company next door or across the street can easily switch a merchant in our portfolio to their program. So the main thing that's going to separate us from the next guy is our customer service. And by developing teams where merchants are dealing with the same people whether it be daily or weekly or monthly, it gives that tremendous edge on when it comes time where, you know, somebody solicits their business, they think twice because most of our merchant base has been through at least three merchant service providers over their lifetime before they got to us. And they know how it is. They know how frustrating it can be and how lengthy the time could be to call, you know, and get even the most simple question answered. With us, it can be done in seconds, you know, what could take a fairly long time and perhaps still not have an answer. And that leads into another thing is experience. This is a complicated industry when doing support and various features of ongoing management of the accounts. Our average tenure here is 3.5 years for support. So it means a lot in a day of a lot of companies. Just they're constantly turning out employees. And this is one of those businesses where it takes a lot to learn all the ins and outs of each of the terminals and the softwares and the gateways that are utilized to process credit cards on a daily basis.
So the problem solving would be a strong skill set that you want your people to have.
Absolutely. Imagine if you're calling on just everybody has a cell phone. If you're calling, Verizon or AT&T, and you're calling regarding a, something wrong with your phone. I mean, do you want to sit on the phone for 30 minutes or 45 minutes while somebody tries to figure out something that the next guy sitting next to him would be able to get you off the phone in 2 minutes? And that's where the disparity is we are, tenure and experience in the customer service department is key to our success, and why our attrition is so low is because they can get your questions answered very quickly. And that comes from experience. There's no real book on all the ins and outs and all the problems that can possibly be created when processing credit cards. I know people kind of go into a store or what have you, and they give them their credit card and they swipe it, and they think, it's a very seamless, easy process. There's a lot of potholes that you have to avoid, and you have to be able to patch those up very quickly so the merchant is back up and running. Because if they're down, I know everybody's been to a store where they've been down and can't accept credit cards, well, it just creates a major problem, which leads to lost sales.
Yeah.
The quicker we can get them up, and the quicker we can resolve their problem, they can get on their way and continue to make sales.
So what have been the results of focusing on customer service?
Extremely, extremely low attrition. We had our portfolio looked at as far as for me in a industry a very well-known industry consultant was doing kind of a measurement of various portfolios, and ours was in the tops of from attrition standpoint of actually losing merchants, like merchants gained versus merchants lost. The percentages are extremely low. Obviously, you can't prevent a merchant from going out of business. You can't prevent, certain factors that are beyond your control. What you can prevent is a bad customer support.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's where the advantage from our company standpoint and why we have such a low attrition rate is from the customer support.
So now, are you the kind of company that's always challenging your performance level? What we would call a definition in good to great, that you're always trying to push up the bar, like a high performing athlete. That does your company culture know that there's a price to pay to keep you in that game at a high performance level?
Absolutely, and the key is we're always constantly striving to get better, and that means allowing every person within the organization an open forum to tell us. We have meetings twice a month, and with the manager of customer support meets with everybody, and they're constantly juggling what can we be doing better, let's call it a round table, and figuring out, where the improvement can be, and sharing their thoughts and sharing. Sometimes it can be something simple, such as, I found a way to be able to do this. It's been something that's been recurring with a lot of merchants, and it's just sharing that knowledge and that information. And so when that call comes into another sales customer service representative, they know how to fix it. But the most important thing is getting them all all to the point where the feedback, it's open feedback. There's no, we don't have any set ways. And we also reward for certain things that one does. If somebody gets a letter or email from a merchant, which we get a lot of that, praising their service or their support, that gets rewarded. And, we have a wheel of fortune in the office. They get to spin the wheel, and it's all types of prizes on there. So we make it fun.
Uh-huh.
We make it real fun, and we take it seriously. And another big thing that I want to add that I think is unusual is the fact that everybody can at least think of a handful of days throughout the year that they just don't feel like coming to work, whether it be they had a bad experience that morning or just not feeling well or maybe even got into a fight with their significant other, who knows, or a family member. Well, at that point, we have, we give a week off of just a week per year. Not something you have to take, but it's obviously, we don't want you coming into the office if you're not feeling like you want to be here, because it's going to show to our customers, that everybody can handpick some days that they just, you don't want to take calls and you don't want to be in that environment, and this is the wrong environment to be in if you feel that way. So we give them, it's their paid days off, and we know everybody has them, and we just rather you not come in, and perhaps you take a call and you're just not, it's the wrong time, and you could lose a merchant over that. So we do offer that to our employees, which I think helps a lot.
Well, so talk to me about what obstacles you have and how you overcome those obstacles to helping getting your employees to execute this process of customer service.
Say that one more time. I'm sorry.
When you think about working through customer service issues, and you're trying to get your employees to use it, sometimes there's obstacles. So what do you do to overcome those obstacles?
Well, what we do, in that case is, with the different, the various,
when people aren't doing what you want them to do.
Well, if they're not doing what we want to do, in a situation like that, the manager will take over and have various calls, because a lot of times, it brings up a good point, you have people from The hardest thing we find is when people come in from different another company and they're used to it a certain way,
mm-hmm.
and they come to our company and with you know that are have experience, and it creates an issue. What we try to do is we're strict on that matter. We want it's going to be done the way that you know it's going to be the right way, and the you know the way that everybody here is trained, which we at least feel is the right way. And if it becomes an issue. It's just that not everybody's met for, you know, this company. Not everybody's met for another company. And, you know, fortunately, this has we've had maybe one time in 9 years that we've had, you know, an issue with that somebody was, you know, was resistant towards what we were doing and didn't adapt to, you know, the type of service and the way that we train. And our interview process is a triple interview process. So we were able to very well weed out somebody that doesn't have share our same vision and our same, you know, our same goals of customer service excellence.
Uh huh. Well, how many people at Elite are involved in customer service?
We have a total of 28.
Mm hmm. Mm hmm.
28. That includes in the four offices.
Well, now are you a company that sees? You know, only sees value in terms of improvement coming from within the company, or do you see value in outside experts?
Well, we see value in any situation, whether it be inside or outside. However, we see the most value in some when you know in these inside roundtable type discussions that we have with the different groups. Whether it be customer service, terminal deployment, you know, and the various departments that we have, or sales, we do these roundtable. But yes, we do see value, and we have hired consultants to give us. You know, sometimes it's good to have somebody with a neutral point of view to kind of look inside the company and give us you know feedback, whether it be positive or negative. To help improve, you know, improve us operationally.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of combo of both, because I think that, you know, people often think, you know, I mean, consultants can be good. I think it's a good thing to get a third party view that has no, you know, they have no bars in what to say as far as from a company operations. You can always be improving, and sometimes. Somebody that is that's a step back from the company could see things that maybe people inside the company cannot.
Now, you mentioned sales. Do you have a sales team that goes out to sell your services to get new clients?
Yes, we have a heavy sales force.
Oh, do you ever looking for clients in Orange County?
Always.
Well, I was going to one idea that I had as we get deeper into customer service issues, talking to CEOs who have been identified as you were as one of you know providing exceptional customer service. I was just wondering, would you be interested in being on a panel down here in Orange County where we would invite other companies to come in and you know have a panel of four or five CEOs who are doing exceptional customer service, and then invite the CEOs in Orange County to come and listen to the kind of things that you've been doing. Would that be something to be interested in doing?
Absolutely. I think that'd be phenomenal. That's a great thing. I'd love to be part of that.
Great. Well, that's super. Now, tell me, what obstacles have you, as you tried to implement these plans to improve customer service, what obstacles popped up?
Well, the obstacles that popped up are finding the right people. You know, you have to find the right people that share your same core values, or say company values, and that is the hardest part that we find is finding the people to do the job that we expect and demand. And without the right people, you can't implement what you want. And you know the other problem here is. Not problem, I should say. Obstacle is a lot of the software that we implement and that we have, and and the systems, it creates a heavy training load. And, you know, some people may not be good at one thing and they may be good at the other. There's a lot to learn on this industry. So the curve to learning is hard. We try new stuff all the time, and you know, not everything's a winner. I mean, unfortunately, I wish I could say that we bat 1,000 average, but you know, just like anybody, we have our things that we try, and they don't do so well, mm-hmm. and they didn't work out. But you know, if you don't try something, you'll never know if it works. So those are the two things. We have quite a bit of various software programs, and then some of the programs that we try to implement seem to, you know, some just don't work out, and it becomes a minor problem. But we're very quick to adjust, and you know, we're back on our feet trying something else, you know, very shortly after.
Now, when you are looking and hiring, do you use any assessment tools? I mean, how do you determine before you hire them whether somebody has the values or the skills or competencies or behaviors that's going to be necessary to be successful?
Well, good question. That's part of our triple interview process. And what we, you know, the things that we assess are, you know, obviously if you say you can do certain things, we have an HR person that does that handles a test when you come in for an interview. So if you say you can do this, that, and the other, there's a test that obviously tests your proficiency. So we can easily find if that person said that they can, let's just say that they know Excel and PowerPoint in and out, and all of a sudden they can't even do a formula on Excel. Well, we know there's a problem here. As far as when it comes to the knowing the person themselves and their attitude, I mean, it can be challenging in an interview process because generally people bring on their best face. You know, so you kind of just learn over the years. I mean, the best way to put it is our, HR person has been here for like four or five years and it just interviewed over the time. You kind of just get a feel, just like in anything, you just get a feel for who's really telling you the whole story and who's just acting. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get a feel for it, I guess, is the best way to say it. I mean, I'm not in the interview process, but that's what I've been told by our HR person is you just get a feel for them. And, you know, it doesn't always work. Your instincts aren't always right.
Right.
But we can weed out the people that don't pass certain criteria. We have a test when you come in, and it's not a comprehensive test, just a little bit of, you know, a questionnaire that talks about, you know, a little bit about what would you do in this situation, what would you do in that situation, and then, you know, on the various programs that are, you know, on one's resume, we have a little test for those as well, just to, you know, kind of get a, it helps us, you know, narrow it down, narrow the field down, because you'd be surprised how many people on their resumes put stuff that they know nothing about.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's interesting.
Yeah, it's shocking to me, but it's quite often.
Well, this has been very interesting. Lots of good ideas here. Let's finish up by telling me the top three things that make Elite different from other merchant providers.
Well, the top three things, you can't go anywhere in merchant services unless you have the pricing. Our pricing is superior. We offer our clients the best pricing in the industry. We're one of Chase Payment Tech's largest clients. I mean, everybody knows who Chase is, you know, one of the largest banks in the world. So, therefore, you know, the more volume you do in this business, the better pricing breaks you get. So we're able to pass that along to our clients. The second thing would be our customer service. We have, just as we went over the last 15 minutes or so, our customer service I consider to be unparalleled in the industry. We really break our backs to try to please our merchants and make sure that they're always up and running and satisfied. And the third thing I would say is our innovation. We not only are we're constantly trying to figure out ways to not only to help our clients, but also sometimes to help the community. Just for instance, in December, we had the Give Back Week, Elite Give Back Week, whereas we got a bunch of merchants to be able to, we put boxes for the toys for the kids. We showed up at one of their drives to hand out toys for the kids around right before Christmas time, and we donated for each merchant that participated. We donated a week's worth of credit card processing to this foundation. So we do a lot of things like that, and also do stuff that merchants appreciate to drum up their business, such as we have marketing tools for them to use, such as text messaging systems where merchants can, when they come aboard with us, they're able to run text message promotions, to our vast amount of people, and whether it be 15% off tonight for dinner, all that type of stuff. Those are true value-added services that most providers aren't providing. We're looking at ways that increase our customers' business, because if our customers' business increases, our business increases.
That's a wonderful motto to have. Justin, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us, and you've given us a lot to think about, and I'll give you a call, and we'll schedule some time to put a panel together and talk a little bit more about this.
Hey, thanks for having me, Will. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Just before we leave, how would somebody get in touch with you or Elite?
Well, the office I'm at is easy to remember. It's 866-U-ACCEPT or 822-2378.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot, Justin. We look forward to talking with you again.
Okay, thanks, Will. Bye.
So, wonderful experience with customer service puts this company at the forefront of client retention. Something to think about. And while we're thinking, let's think along with our friends over at Sandler Training.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Never ask for the order. Make the prospect give up. Always ask for the order is the salesperson's 11th commandment. The one that just dropped right off the tablets. Never ask for the order goes completely against traditional selling methods. If you don't ask for the order, how will you ever know when the customer is going to buy? Well, think about it. The only person who can really ask for the order is the prospect. Find the prospect's emotional needs first, provide the answers to meet these needs, and you'll discover that the prospect will give up and ask you for the order. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
So, this afternoon, I want to spend a little time with a wonderful and tremendously interesting guy who has been around and doing lots of great things. He regularly does speaking to large audiences around the country. You may know him as 617 Patrick. Patrick, welcome to Pilgrim Talks.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Glad to be on the 405.
Yeah, that's right. So tell me, Patrick, what is this 617 Patrick? Why am I introducing you that way?
Well, because for your audience in the 405, I'm actually from the area code 617, and I got myself that phone number just so that I'd be easy to find. So if you dial 617 Patrick, that gets to my phone number. My web address is also 617 Patrick. My Twitter name is 617 Patrick, so that's the easiest way to find me in this world. And if you take a look at the internet today, I mean, that's a big part of what branding is making sure you're easy to find, easy to remember. So that's what I decided to go with.
Now, do you have shirts from Land's End that have 617 Patrick, over the breast pocket?
I absolutely do. And, if I've been on Fox TV a lot of times, a lot of times I'll wear that shirt. A lot of times I'll wear it to business meetings because it's actually a good conversation piece.
You don't have any tattoos, do you?
No, I haven't gone that crazy yet. If they change the area codes, it'd make it tough.
Well, there's a fellow I was noticing the other day is a fellow called, what he does is every day he wears a different T-shirt and pitches a different product. And so maybe you can get him to wear 617 Patrick sometime on his show.
Great idea. I mean, that's business innovation these days, you
that's
know?
Right.
Different people doing different things that would have been determined crazy a few years ago.
Right. That's right. Absolutely. Well, so now, tell me, you know, one of the things that we wanted to spend some time doing was talking about how individuals, companies, especially SMBs, can use social media. So let's pick an example here. How would people in the audience here, if they wanted to, how could they use LinkedIn to get more leads?
Okay, one of the things that I love talking to audiences about is the search capability of LinkedIn. I mean, salespeople are always looking for leads. And if you get leads, you've got to make phone calls in a lot of cases. You've got to make cold calls. And nobody likes getting cold calls. As a matter of fact, how many cold calls do you get in a day or in a week?
Oh, maybe 5.
How many do you love getting?
Well, you know, that's a kind of a tricky question because I always take it and turn it around on them and begin to evaluate their ability to make a cold call. But, you know, for the most part, it breaks up my day. It's not something I look forward to.
Okay, and for most people, they hate getting cold calls, especially people in a position where they get a lot of people trying to sell to them all day long. Well, what I do is to show people how to make that easier by doing research on LinkedIn. And let me give you an example of how salespeople can get better leads. Let's say that you were a computer hardware reseller. Because one of my clients is a computer hardware reseller, and they sell Cisco routers. And they know they sell them to people that are vice presidents of operations and chief technical officers. So if I had the territory, Boston, Massachusetts, I could actually go to LinkedIn and do an advanced search and search just for vice presidents of operations within 100 miles of Boston, and LinkedIn would show me who those people were. And I'll tell you, I do speeches to probably 50 groups a year, and it's rare that more than 30% even knows that the advanced search is there.
Now, do you have to pay more for the advanced search?
Good question. No. You don't. And most people don't even realize how simple it is to get to. In the upper right-hand corner, there's a little search box that says people. And most people think you can only find people if you know their name. Well, just to the right of that, it says advanced search. And if you click on that, you can search for anybody in LinkedIn based on either their title or based on their city or based on any of the attributes of their profile. And so it's essentially a Rolodex of almost all the business people in the United States or, frankly, in the world. Now, you don't have to pay to use it. Sometimes you have to pay to get some of the results. And the more you pay, the more LinkedIn lets you see. Although there are tricks you can use to get around that also.
To get around paying for it? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, if LinkedIn doesn't show you a full description of somebody's profile, in a lot of cases, they'll hide it from you, but Google will actually have a copy of the profile. So if you take some of the keywords that you see in the abbreviated LinkedIn profile, you can do a search in Google, and you get to see the whole profile there, and you get to see it for free instead of paying $25, which is one of their plans, $50, which is another one of their plans, or $100, which is another one of their plans.
Now, are you saying that through Google you can see the actual LinkedIn page with all the information?
It has most of the information on it. The Google version actually has an abbreviated version.
Uh-huh.
But once you know that person's name, you can see a lot. You can see it through LinkedIn. It's just that LinkedIn will prevent you from seeing the person's last name.
Oh, that's right. I have seen that. I have it. That's correct. Yeah.
And actually, that just started happening in the beginning of this year, that for your third level connections, that is the people that are a friend of a friend of a friend, for those people, you'd see the person's first name and just a last initial.
Oh, well, that's nice to know. I saw that, and I thought that was because the person had made that kind of choice to only give well, that makes it a lot easier to handle.
Well, no, that actually means you know a lot about LinkedIn, too, because there is a way with LinkedIn that you can privatize your profile so that people don't see your last name. But LinkedIn also, it used to be that LinkedIn would show you the first name and the last name for each of these people. Now it just shows you the third, just shows you the last initial for your third level connection.
Okay, so that's interesting. So you can search. You can actually search in LinkedIn for job titles, job positions. You can search for areas within certain radii from where I am, so we can get a geographical location. So that's good. Well, what's another example of how you've taught people to use LinkedIn?
Okay, well, let's talk about where the rubber meets the road here. I actually had an actual client who gave me numbers on their progress. I had given a speech to their sales staff on how to use LinkedIn, and I gave them one tip that allowed them to close somewhere between 6 and 8 deals in a 4-month period because they were tracking this. And the deals were for at least $25,000. They don't do anything for less than $25,000. So they made between $150,000 and $200,000 using this LinkedIn technique. And it'll make a lot of sense when you hear it. Here's the concept. They sold insurance to startup companies. So they wanted to talk to chief financial officers. And what they would do is to do a LinkedIn advanced search, look for CFOs or chief financial officers in whatever their geographical area was. And LinkedIn will tell you which ones are there. But here's the technique that they used. LinkedIn will also tell you which CFOs are friends of yours through LinkedIn and which CFOs are friends of friends. Now, LinkedIn calls those friends of friends second-level connections. So what this group started doing is searching for CFOs and then letting LinkedIn show them which ones were friends of friends. Now, here's where the technique becomes a little bit magic if you haven't heard it before. When you call that person by doing a little Google research and finding the company phone number, when you call that person, instead of calling them up and saying, hey, I'm selling insurance, which probably makes it the least interesting call of the week, instead of calling and saying, hey, I'm selling insurance, you call up and you say, hey, we both have a mutual friend, so-and-so. Now can I get 5 minutes of your time? And that makes it much harder for the person that you're calling to ignore you, especially if the friend in the middle is a good connection, someone you like, someone you trust, and someone that they like, and someone that they trust. And here was the real magical thing that I think salespeople and VPs of sales and CEOs should really hearken to. Here's the idea. If you have a new salesperson or a salesperson that hasn't been that productive, and all of a sudden you start using this technique, that individual may be able to get to people that nobody else could get to just because someone in their network, that is some friend of theirs, happens to know some CFO. And let me give you one specific example of that. Let's say you've got a young new salesperson and they haven't had any luck making sales. They use this technique. They find out that the CFO of some new hot startup company happens to be their college roommate's father. Now, without LinkedIn, they never would have known that. But if they do a LinkedIn search and they were linked with their college roommate and the college roommate was linked with his father, then all of a sudden that salesperson can get in a door that nobody could have gotten into before.
Well, let me put a little spin on what you're talking about then. There's some of us who are not going to be talking to our college roommates' fathers. but it may well be that we are talking to our sons whose college roommates are the CEOs of particular companies.
that's also true. That's also true. But one of the other things that I do is to recommend to people that they also get LinkedIn connections with their neighbors, for instance. Because even though it may not make sense that, you know, I mean, if you're a an insurance salesperson and your neighbor is an accountant, maybe they're not going to buy insurance from you because maybe their company already has it, but maybe they know somebody that does. And this is really the way that business has been done for, you know, a couple hundred years, that, you know, people tried to use friends of friends to make sales, but it was just impossible to get this kind of information before LinkedIn. And now LinkedIn makes it easy, and hardly anybody's using it yet, which is what surprises me.
Uh-huh. Well, all right, so you're not out of examples, are you?
No.
Right, give me some more. Give me some more here.
All right, let me give you one that's a little bit unusual. I had a client that had Tampa Bay Rays baseball tickets in the third row at the Tampa Bay Rays games. And I said to them, you know, what do you do with the tickets if you can't use them? Because they have season tickets, and, you know, they can't use these tickets for all 80 games. I said, what do you do? Because these are unbelievable seats. And they said, well, you know, sometimes we give them to friends and family, but sometimes just nobody can go. And I said, all right, here's a clever way to use LinkedIn. Do an advanced search. Look for anybody that has the word chief in their title. In other words, they might be a chief executive officer, a chief technical officer, chief information officer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So look for anyone that's got chief in their title. Then look also at the same time to see if anyone has either the word baseball or Rays in the title, because the team's name is the Tampa Bay Rays. I said, if you do that, you can essentially look at LinkedIn for anybody who's got the word chief in their title and cares about baseball. Now, if you've got tickets left over for some game and you can't use them anyway, that's a fun cold call. You call that company and you ask to talk to that person and you say, hey, I've got tickets in the third row for the Tampa Bay Rays game tonight. Do you want to go? Now, you're going to throw the tickets away anyway. Why not give them to a potential buyer who's going to love taking your call? And even if they don't buy, don't you think they might give you a referral to somebody else? Don't you think they're going to consider you the nicest person on earth? And, I mean, you could use that same concept for a whole bunch of things. But what I try to teach people is that LinkedIn is a research engine that can solve a lot of your problems if you just look at it the right way.
All right, now, let me make sure I have the details here. You said look for anybody in their title who has chief in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then with the you know, if it's the Rays, where is that in their profile, or what would you put that in?
I probably should have been a little bit more clear. Here's the idea. A lot of the people that are chief executive officers, for instance, won't say what their personal interests are. But some of them will use the LinkedIn capability to put in their interests. And so at the bottom of their profile, they'll say that they're either into baseball or they'll say that they're Tampa Bay Rays fans, etc. So here's what you want to do. You want to go to the upper right-hand corner of your LinkedIn page and click on where it says Advanced Search. And when you do the search, you can put any word that you want into the title search box. And in that, you'd probably put either chief or vice, if you wanted to go after vice presidents. Or you decide, you know, how you want to do a search in the title field. But in the regular keywords field, you say Rays, which is the name of the Tampa team, or you say baseball. And that way you will see out of all the chief, you know, executive officers and chief technical officers in the Tampa Bay area, you will see the ones that specifically said Rays or baseball. because you know if you call those people, they're going to take your call. The secretary will let you through if you say you're giving away third row tickets to the baseball game.
I got it.
Come on, okay. That's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. Yeah, all right.
And it really boils down to looking at LinkedIn a different way.
Yeah.
Most people who sign up for LinkedIn put up a profile, and then they think magic is going to happen, that just business is going to fall in their lap somehow.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that's not the way that it works. The way that it works is you take the concepts that you've been wanting to use forever and see where LinkedIn can help you. So, I mean, you know, 10 years ago, if you had Tampa Bay Rays tickets, you'd be saying, you know, I wish I could give these to somebody and maybe get business from them at some point in the future. And now you can find some of those people online pretty quickly. Like, I'm talking about in 30 seconds, and make a few phone calls, see who you can find, and you were going to give the tickets away anyway. Why not make a friend that, you know, has the title, Chief Executive Officer, Chief Technical Officer, or you can also try it for Vice President. Or if you sell Cisco routers, you could just look for anybody that put the word Cisco somewhere in their profile because you know that those people care about Cisco. If you also did a search for baseball, you know they care about baseball. You were going to give the tickets away anyway. Why not give the tickets to somebody who could be a potential prospect?
Well, while you were talking, I got onto my LinkedIn and put Chief and searched a keyword was hockey.
Nice.
And, wow, here's CEOs that I know. Here's Hal Reisinger, who's a good friend, and I'm due to go to have lunch with him in the next couple of weeks.
Now, I should have been a little bit more clear. If you have hockey tickets for the Bruins, you should just ask me right now. Forget about Hal.
No, I was talking about...
I can go.
I understand, but I was talking about the Stanley Cup team.
Are you saying my team's not going to make it to the Stanley Cup? Is that what you're saying?
The ones who won the Stanley Cup. Remember Southern California?
I actually forgot. I completely forgot about that. It took me a while and a lot of therapy to forget about it, but I forgot about it. Don't bring it back.
Well, there you go. Okay. Well, all right. Now, so let's talk about profiles. What can somebody do to improve their profile?
Okay, I'll give you a couple of clever tips about how to set up your profile. Because I come from a search engine background, and I have a different perspective on this than other people. Here's one. My last name is O'Malley, and it gets misspelled all the time. A lot of people spell it without an apostrophe. A lot of people spell it without an E. Well, it actually works out that you can put those common misspellings into the summary field of your profile. And if you put the common misspellings into the summary field, LinkedIn will pick up on it. So here's what I do. I put misspellings like O-M-A-L-L-Y into the summary field of my profile. And if somebody goes looking for Patrick O'Malley and misspells it, if I have that misspelling in my profile, then LinkedIn will see that the word is there, and it'll see that that's the only place where Patrick and that misspelled O'Malley both show up, so it'll say, all right, this is considered a match. And the way that works out well for me is that there are 160 Patrick O'Malleys in LinkedIn, but if you spell my last name six different ways that are wrong, I'm the only one that shows up. Now, let's see how this would apply to you specifically. How many people misspell your last name, C-H-R-I-S?
Oh, lots. Lot.
There you go. And if they go looking for you in LinkedIn and they spell it that way, you wouldn't get found. But if you put that misspelling in your profile, you will still get found. And if you put it in your summary field and you say commonly misspelled words, when they find you, they're probably going to say, wow, that's clever. I misspelled his name and I was still able to find him. That guy's pretty clever. Of course, on the 405, they already know that about you.
All right. So tell me 617 Patrick. Tell me, what is it that what should CEOs know about LinkedIn?
CEOs have a little bit of a tougher time with LinkedIn, and it's because CEOs are always perceived as buyers. So they're going to get a lot of cold calls because people on LinkedIn are going to be able to find them. And so CEOs have to be a little bit careful and should look at the privacy settings that LinkedIn has, because LinkedIn allows you to minimize the number of people that can connect with you if you want. Now, the flip side of that is there are a lot of people that would want to connect with CEOs, some of which might be able to help the CEO get business. So it's sort of a double-edged sword, and it's the kind of thing CEOs have probably been dealing with their whole lives. If they go to a network meeting, there are going to be people that are going to try to sell to them, but there also might be people that might buy from them. There are people that they should probably have relationships with. So they've got to decide how they want to deal with LinkedIn philosophically and who they want to connect to. But here's one big tip I give that I've never heard anybody else give. When you set up your profile in LinkedIn, one of the things that you can do is to set up an email address that is a little bit different than the email address that you typically use. For instance, the typical email address that I use is pat@617patrick.com. And by the way, I've got both of them set up so it works whether you use the hyphen or not. However, in LinkedIn, I make sure that it thinks my primary email address is a different email address. And I make sure that when I receive those emails that it goes into a separate folder. So in other words, anyone who sends me an email through LinkedIn sends the email to me, but I file it in a different folder. And that way I can just sort of scan through the emails that I get there and try to figure out which ones are legitimate and which ones are spam. So it really saves time if you set up your email like that.
Oh, okay, so you're setting up a separate email account, and that could be through Gmail, that would go, when somebody sends it there, would go to a separate account, and you go to that periodically and take a look at it.
Exactly. Except for me, I even make it easier than that. Since I have my email sent to, most of my email gets sent to pat@617-patrick.com. What I do instead is on LinkedIn, I tell LinkedIn that that is a legitimate address for me, but I tell LinkedIn that when it sends email to me, it should send it to patlinkedin@617-patrick.com. In other words, I just change the name at the front as if that's a real name for me.
Yeah.
And I just make sure that when I read my email, I set up filters so that that email gets filed into a different place.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you just filter it out.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, all right. That sounds good.
Yeah, that's a time-saving tip that CEOs can use. But I'll tell you also, CEOs should be making sure that their salespeople are all on LinkedIn and that their salespeople are also linked with each other, because it's conceivable that if you wanted to, for instance, get to know someone at Oracle, if you wanted to get to the VP of operations at Oracle, it's conceivable that a CEO connected to everybody in the company might then find that there is a third-level connection to the VP of operations at Oracle. And what LinkedIn would say to that CEO is that a specific person in the office, and he might not know who that person is, a specific person in the office knows someone who knows the VP of operations at Oracle. So in other words, it would help the CEO to get a map of who knows who and who you can use in the company, whose network you can leverage to get to these high-profile prospects that you're interested in getting to. Now, that same thing, by the way, would be useful for a VP of sales, because if the VP of sales has connections set up the same way, that VP can decide who to use to try to get to a target prospect, because again, if you use this friends of friends concept, you're more likely to be able to get to talk to somebody than if you just, you know, really cold call someone, not knowing them at all.
Okay. All right. Anything else that that CEO should know?
Let's see. Here's another one. LinkedIn has a questions and answers section. And, you know, it's a place where people who have professional questions ask for things, and people who have answers to those questions can answer them. Well, if you're a CEO, or if, you know, anybody in the company wants to do this, they can check to see if people are talking about their products. And here's an example. Let's say, going back to an example I gave before, let's say that you sell Cisco routers. And for the sake of argument, let's say the only Cisco routers that you sell are Cisco 3456 routers. In other words, let's say that's a model number. Did you realize that you could go to LinkedIn, go to the questions and answers section, and do a search only for questions and answers that refer to the Cisco 3456 router? So in other words, you could see people that were asking questions about it, answering questions about it. Now you know that those people are potential prospects.
Wow.
Huh?
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick, this has been very valuable information. I really appreciate you taking time to spend with people here in Southern California.
I've enjoyed it. I get to drive the 617 all the time, but not the 405.
Well, that's good. The 617 Patrick and the Pilgrim on the 405 come together on a radio show. That's pretty nice.
It's awesome.
Well, now, Patrick, if somebody wanted to talk to you more, or wanted to invite you in to do some training for them or to speak to their group, how would they get in touch with you? Let me guess.
I love doing it.
Let me guess.
Exactly. You guess. My phone number, 617-PATRICK. My web address is 617patrick.com. And on that site, I have demo videos, and I have a lot of educational stuff. I have a blog that has a lot of quality tips on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and blogging for business. So that would be the way to get in touch with me. Anything through 617-PATRICK.
Well, that's wonderful. How would you feel if we just schedule another time next week or next time that you have some time, and we'll do a follow-up on this and maybe do something on Twitter or one of the other social media apparatuses?
Love to, because I'll tell you, Twitter and YouTube, believe it or not, can be incredibly powerful. I'm doing a speech on that on Wednesday. But I've done a bunch of them in the past, and I think your audience would appreciate it, because I bet nobody thinks Twitter and YouTube are useful, and I can prove they are.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We look forward to talking to you again, Patrick.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks.
And there we are. We've had a great time today listening to, first, what customer care means for one of the top companies in the country in merchant services. And then we've also heard from a Jedi master in LinkedIn. And I spoke with Patrick earlier in the week and scheduled some time for him to be back again for us. He's going to be talking about Twitter and YouTube. So stick around. We'll have a lot more to talk about for salespeople and sales managers and CEOs about how to use social media. Glad to be with you. Glad that you were with us. Look forward to being with you again next week on Pilgrim Talks with the Pilgrim on the 405, listening and observing and reporting what's happening in Southern California.
And there you have it. That's the Pilgrim on the 405. Reporting back from the wilderness, from the frontiers of sales techniques and technologies, only on OCTalkRadio.net.